Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It is January 27th, and this is Literary Underground's Project U Radio. And we are airing tonight before Red Fez Radio, which should be on, I believe, at 12 Eastern Time, 11 Central. And I hope I have that right, and I apologize if I don't. We've been sort of tweaking the lineup a little bit, and so we decided it would be better to have it on the same night. And so Tim Murray will actually follow us after. We also decided, I decided that one of the things we would do is take a break from doing some of these topic shows. We're obviously doing that tonight. We do have a discussion topic, but the next couple of shows are going to be a little bit different. We have like an open mic call-in show planned, a couple of interviews, just different things going on, just to sort of take a break from some of the heavy discussion, do something else for a while. So we do have a page on the Literary Underground. It's at literaryunderground.org/Project U Radio, and we do put the schedule up there. So we have all the different segments. I'm not sure if Frankie Metro will be on tonight. He's been doing a show on Tuesday night. Actually, he did it on Monday this week, but he does the Draconian Vampire Tunnel. Is closed for repairs. It's been closed for repairs. He does a little mix of music and just all kinds of stuff. I mean, Frankie really, he just digs up all kinds of things. I mean, just tracks and just things that are new to a lot of us, interesting stuff. He really mixes it up, and he does a really good job. So if you're a night owl and you are up in the middle, up in the middle of the night with, nothing going on, you should definitely check out his show. He does a pretty good job with linking and spreading the word on it. So I'm going to go ahead and see if Paul's around tonight. I should just say that, I hope you're on, Paul. Hello.
Hello. I'm here. Can you hear me? Am I coming through?
Yeah.
I never know. It's always hit or miss with me. I never know if I am going to be able to hear me or not.
Yeah, it's a little bit quirky, and I apologize for that. The switchboard is a little bit strange tonight. Tonight we're actually, I think we're only running for a half hour tonight. It's not going to be like one of those marathon discussions or arguments that goes over into the archives. I mean, I don't think anybody's up for that tonight. I mean, it's just,
Is that how it works now? The Project Underground will run for half an hour, and then Tim's show pops on after that?
I believe there is a break, and then his show is on. And the part of the confusion is that obviously ours is on the Literary Underground. It's a separate entity, and his is Red Fez Radio. So people are always asking me which is which, and which show is on which account, and which page, and it gets kind of, I know it gets confusing, but
Michelle's the one pulling the strings. She's the puppet master.
I know.
Flash extraordinaire that, kind of gets all these little projects going. I'm like, wait, what's going on? I mean, I can't even keep up. I can't even keep up with anything anymore. I know y'all are starting to plan like the Zyfez committee not Zyfez per se, but it seems like there's a lot of good organizing going on, which I wholeheartedly support and am behind and think is, a good idea and possibly long overdue. Who knows?
Well, Michelle is, she's a woman after my own heart. I mean, she's the kind of person that has a way of getting things done, has a way of recruiting people, getting people involved, and she's all about community and really putting things together. I don't know how she does it. I mean, she's got a day job, she's got a life, and somehow in between all of that, she does a lot of stuff, a lot of work, and yeah, there
outstanding
it is
work too.
Right. It really is. And so I know that Leopold put up a lot of new stuff on the Red Fez site to try to make it a little bit easier for people. One of the issues is the time zone difference. People are always saying, you know, well, what time is it Pacific? What time is it Eastern? And it gets difficult because we're all spread out and, you know, it's a different time for everyone, especially when it crosses over midnight, because then it's actually a different day for some people. And
sure.
Yeah, it gets really confusing.
Although I noticed Blog Talk Radio itself is very good about giving you the accurate time to your time zone. Like whatever
right.
time zone you're in, you go into Blog Talk and you see it's your time zone that they tell you that it's coming on. So the Blog Talk Radio site is, if you can find the show in the Blog Talk Radio archives, which are massive and awe-inspiring, but it's but if you can find it, you know, you can get the right starting time. But otherwise, yeah, it's good if people can announce it, if they announce it, you know, hey, this time zone, and the rest of us can kind of do the math.
Right. Well, it's and you have to actually have an account, I believe, on Blog Talk Radio, actually have a login and log in for your time zone for that to work. I mean, people, when they just visit the site, it's listed, I believe, in Central Time. So, you know, if you're not actually logged in on your own, you know, your own computer with your own password, I believe it, I don't know that it actually updates it for you. It might. I mean, it might be kind of intuitive that way, but yeah, I think it just gets confusing, and so we do our best. And I think, you know, Friday night, I mean, let's face it, Friday night people are out, people have other things to do, and, you know, it's not really the most optimal time to sit and discuss some of these things. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, a lot of the people, a lot of the crowds we run with these things are, you know, people are out. Come on.
I always think it's ironic when I'm on the show and say, well, I'm not, I'm here right now, but... You know, fact of the matter is, I've called from the road a few times, so it's that's all. But you know, but I believe in radio on the run. I think that's a good thing.
All right. Well,
so, yeah.
You know, I'm 10 minutes in, and I haven't even gotten to the actual topic yet, which is a topic that came up because of a lot of reasons, a lot of discussion. You know, when you get a bunch of editors together, a bunch of people doing projects, you know, obviously these questions come up. You know, as far as what do you put out there? And there are times where we wonder ourselves, you know, what's too much? You know, how personal should we be? How far should we go when we talk about our lives, you know, in our personal business? And is it really fair? I mean, is it fair to include other people in that? I mean, you know, there have been some issues where people have written some pretty personal pieces, you know. There, a lot of people have mixed views. I mean, you know, I actually, what I did when I was talking about it, well, actually, I posted about it, and I said, you know, sometimes people might have a comment and they don't necessarily want to get on and say it, you know, they want to kind of be anonymous or just sort of send their comments, but I'm going to actually start and read one of them because, you know, really the topic is, you know, what's too much? I mean, and this is what this person said, and I thought it was kind of interesting to think about. There is a difference between confessional writing and even between working through our demons and a narcissistic exhibitionist tendency to ignore healthy boundaries because the desire for attention at any price makes the short-sighted decision to overshare seem reasonable at the time. Thing is, once you put things out there, you can't take them back, and you might be in a different place a few years later. Plus, there's a perception that being raw, being candid, being honest means that you have to drag others into your circus show, creating unwitting victims in the process. So that's the first one, and just for a little bit of balance. And there's a little more to that. It's a distortion, self-aggrandizing behavior to think that most people even want to hear about your dirty laundry. If you really look at it, this is an abuse of a publishing platform to humiliate people against whom we harbor grudges, both real and imaginary. And then sort of the other side, and I kind of, you know, think it's good to have another view. Being honest is courageous. In a world where people Photoshop their pictures and put on a show, being able to let it all hang out, the good, the bad, the ugly, is an act of vulnerable bravery. Somewhere, somebody out there is nodding their head thinking, I felt this too, or I've done that. So I think it's interesting to sort of have two sides. I mean, I wish this person was willing to come on and talk about it, but, you know, we don't push. But, you know, those are sort of two different opinions about candor and being, you know, sometimes a little too honest. So,
who knows, right? If the person opposed, you could say, well, they've been burned by this. You know, they know what it's like to have things published about them or something. Or the person who has had success might feel quite a bit indebted to the confessional genre of because in accessing, I think the confessional genre is very. I think you get a lot of short story writers and a lot of poets who get a lot of mileage for their own development and evolution as a writer through the confessional genre. I think it's one of the first places that a writer frequently learns to go in their evolution, and especially when they're starting out. It's like, well, some of the hardest, truest things you can write about are experiences from your own life. You know, and that's, I think, kind of the whole idea of writing what you know kind of comes out of that. A little bit, but when your life, you know, but it's more challenging. It's an act of bravery sometimes to write the truth, whether it's about your relationships with your family, relationships you've had with partners, or your inability to cope with society in general. You know, that can make for some pretty rich material or some very vivid type material. It also gets to be one note and shallow pretty quickly too if you don't have a fresh way of approaching it and getting it out there in your writing. And that's, you know, so I think there's always it's I kind of look at it almost as the heavy metal of literature, the confessional genre. It's like, you know, you're kind of getting down and dirty, and it's not always going to be good, but you know, there's certain payoffs you can count on. But it's also like any sort of scene or genre that people get involved with as writers, or sort of headspace that we get into as artists, you have to be careful not to sort of ghettoize yourself or become completely committed to this one style of writing. Otherwise, you're going to stunt your growth as an artist. But I think it's a frequent way station, especially for, you know, the up and coming underground writers. You know, everybody takes a turn and gets an at bat at the confessional plate, as it were. Not that every writer has to. That is obviously a generalization, but it's amazing how many have, though. You know, everybody's sort of got their own hard confessional story out there, and frequently just quite often just go on to other things. Don't ever seem to believe.
I mean, here's my thing. I mean, you know, there's the idea of sort of inventing our autobiography. I mean, you know, do you think in a lot of cases it really is writing the truth? Or, I mean, a lot of times it's exaggerated truth, or it's a persona, or it's, you know, there's an expectation that, an expectation of or perception of how I live my life, and now I have to sort of deliver that through what I do. I mean, let's face it, a lot of people out there, you know, they're home with kids, they're watching Dancing with the Stars, and they're eating tater tots. I mean, you know, they're not under a bridge, you know, strung out on heroin. A lot of these, and I'm not saying they're not, but a lot of there's a lot of people are regular people, and you know, there's a tendency sometimes, I think, to exaggerate some of the more dramatic pieces of their lives because, you know, that's what's interesting and that's what,
some of these people come on like, this is nonfiction, this is the hard truth, this is me, this is what I've been through, and that may or may not be true. We've seen lots of examples where people were writing about that. You know, what kind of a label is being slapped on the work in the first place? Is it fiction? Is it nonfiction? Or is it even poetry? You know, the line's pretty blurry with poetry too. Obviously, you know, some people think that poetry needs to be the hard truth. Lots of poetry is fiction, you know, disguised as poetry. And it takes on a form of, you know, I think storytelling is pretty pretty key to the whole confessional side of things and what people present. I mean, I know when people write these things, they're frequently writing into their past too. You know, they've had their sorted little dance on the dark side, and you're right, they're not really doing that anymore. They're trying to get their lives together. I mean, of course, so they wouldn't be getting their writing out there if they weren't. Although I guess there's some hardcore burners out there still who just believe in the pure pure written word as it exists. But I don't know too many actual beat poets out there living the beat life. I really don't. Especially not with, you know, intense internet access. But people do have stories from their lives, you know, incredible, crazy stories to tell. And those stories do have, you know, they have a popular resonance with the popular culture. If they're sitting here telling you that it's nonfiction and that this is who they are, I don't know. I think it's an individual case by case basis. You know, how is the story being presented? In what context is it being presented? I think that's what answers like your question of like how, is that kind of what you were getting at? Like how authentic the writing is, or how authentic
I think that in this age of social media, especially persona, there's it's all wrapped up together between the work and the persona and the perception and the idea that you're supposed to, you know, sort of create this mythology a little bit about yourself, whether or not it's real. And it doesn't really matter how real it is, really, in the end.
I think persona,
well, sure,
perception, I think it's so, you know, and the part of the problem is it becomes so false, and if it's market-driven, then 9 times out of 10, it's just dropped, it really is classified as nonfiction. They will try to tell you, this is who I really am, because that's where the big money is in publishing, is in nonfiction. And you can see it with the confessional bin. I mean, I can, you know, we can talk about, you know, Jimmy Fry all night long, or we can talk about, you know, J.T. Leroy / Laura Albert all night long. You know, the fact of the matter is, you know, Laura Albert presented, or J.T. Leroy presented their work as fiction primarily. There was this playing around like it was nonfiction, but that was never actually claimed outright. And yet, there's sort of a more resonant truth of the street life in those books than there is in the stuff that James Fry wrote. I don't want to take anything from James Fry writing talent, but he blatantly,
okay.
James Fry deliberately, you know, misrepresented himself to make more money,
Right, and I think a lot of us would say, well, so what? You know, if you think that nobody stretches the truth a little bit when they're telling a story, I mean, go to a family gathering and you'll hear 10 versions of the same story every year. One of the things, I hope that Frank is still on. I think that Frank Reardon is actually a pretty good person to, hopefully he'll, I hope he's there. I hope I didn't hang up on him. But I know that a lot of what he does is I think it's some pretty raw stuff. I mean, you know, I actually have been reading a lot of it recently, so I'm not an expert by any means. But I think there's a lot of candor there. There's a lot of, and there's a lot of vulnerability. I mean, it's not easy to... It's not easy to disclose certain things in our writing either. So, Frank, are you on?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
That's cool. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
we don't
want a lot of the noise that we have on some of the other shows. So,
I've been
hey,
listening
Frank.
To what you're saying. Hey, I've been listening to what you're saying, and like, I kind of agree with you. I think for me, I would say that 90 to 95% of what I do when it's in that realm that Paul was talking about is true, but there might be events that, you know, I might not remember correctly because it could have been 5 to 10 to 15 years ago, and you'll have to, like, you know, screw the wrenches on it a little bit, but tighten the screws. But I don't think you should leave anything out there. If I'm writing about, say, a person and I don't know how that person's going to react, or I might ask their permission if I could use their name. If not, I'll just change their name, like, you know, or change their likeness, because, you know, I don't want to get in trouble on down the line from somebody else. Like, I mean, I don't really make as much money as it is off the book, and I don't want to get in trouble for it, but I'm not going to leave a damn thing out, you know. And as of truth, like, sometimes I might write a story about, let's say, one person, but I might also, like, when I'm writing about that one person, I could be using 3 different people where the same situation happened and making it as one person, you know.
Like a composite, kind of.
Yeah, but I would say that, like, a majority of the things I'm talking about are true, because when I'm living those things, let's say, in the past, they don't seem as explosive or crazy to me because that's how I was living. But 5 years later, I'll be like, wow, man, I was kind of a freaking nutbag back then. Like, that's actually some pretty good material. Like, because that's kind of like – but I don't think you should ever leave anything out. Like, I think that, I mean, I think it's kind of cowardly to leave things out, personally. You know,
well,
whether it be a confessional style.
What about people that
or,
identify
whatever.
Them? Like what? You would protect their identity though. I mean, you wouldn't say, you know, say my wife or my girlfriend or something where it's obvious who you're talking about, you know, or use name.
It depends because, like, for example, I've been working on some short stories about a group of friends growing up, and I asked every single one of them if I could use their names because it's just easier for me to write rather than make up a bunch of names. But if sometimes I'll, like, use like, April's name or somebody's name, sometimes I'll just say she. Usually when I use she, it's because the situation has happened several times with several different people, and it's just a pain in the ass to write about several different people when I can make it all one. Like, you know, or he or whatever. I don't think you should leave anything out. That's my personal thing. Like, there are certain things, like, I don't know. You know, there's, like, I would never, like, write about, like, certain things that involve children. That's kind of just gross and fucked up, but,
yeah,
you know,
no, I agree with you.
I don't think if you're, if someone, like, I don't know, you walked in on someone else sucking someone else's balls on you and it was your girlfriend, I don't think you should leave that out, dude. Like, write about it. That's, like, you know. Like, I don't
right.
know.
Well,
that's
I think we all know somebody. I mean, you know, that's somebody who's written the cuckold story about other people that we know. I mean, I don't know that we've all been through that, but I know that. I know, you know, I had a pretty good friend write a pretty blatant story where it's just, you know, and the names really, I can't even remember if the names were invoked or the names were changed just enough. I knew exactly who was being talked about though. And it was very strange because it was like, oh my God, this was a world I wasn't supposed to step into. This was not supposed to be my business, and yet there it is. Suddenly, it's everybody's business. You know, I think that's one of the lines. Like, do you think that goes too far, Frank, or do you think there are maybe limits involved with that type of storytelling?
I don't think there's any like limits, like. I don't know, like, I heard, like, interesting stories about, like, someone told me this, I don't know if it's April or somebody, but, like, how Kerouac wanted to use everybody's names and the things that were going on, and, like, Dharma Bums, like, all the actual names. But,
right, right, he actually did the original drafts, yeah.
But the publishing companies made him change the name out of fear of being sued. You know, not that I'm ever, or making any kind of Kerouac kind of money, but... You know, what could happen to me in 20 years? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to get someone to get a wise idea and turn around and freaking sue me. I mean, it's not that hard to change a name, but I don't think you should leave any instances out in your writing. I like I said, I think it's kind of cowardly.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a certain charge or duty on behalf of the writer, whether they're fiction or nonfiction. Even a fiction writer is sort of under the duty or the charge to tell the truth. You know, in a way you're telling the truth about the human condition, and it doesn't have to be an accurate representation of history per se, but I think it has to be true to, you know, what we understand about ourselves and what we understand about other people to be true. If that makes sense. I probably sound like I'm babbling, I know.
Well, yeah, but also, like, if you're just talking about, like, poetry or you're talking about truthful writing, but, I mean, if you're, like, writing science fiction or, you know, something of that nature, it's not always necessary. But if you're just talking about, like, poetry and truthful type writing and or nonfiction or what have you, like, I mean...
Sure.
Then, yeah, of course, then I think you should push the limits no matter what. But if you're doing it for kind of like shock value, you can always find those writers that you're reading, like, say, on the internet or something or in a chat book, and you know they're doing it for shock or they're trying to be Hunter S. Thompson when they're not, you know. And
right.
If I did that if I did that much drugs as some of the people write about in their poems, I would have died 10 times over. Like, you know, so...
Hunter wasn't like other people.
Also even said that, like, when he wrote Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, that famous scene in the beginning where he's going through his trunk with all the drugs, he even said later on in his life that he never really did that much. It was for effect.
Right.
He's like, I would have been
right.
dead.
I almost think it's like I almost believe that he had all of them and just didn't do all of them, you know, or maybe dabble.
Oh yeah, not all
some,
at once.
Somebody once said the magic of feeling like a bad boy or feeling like you're a real, you know, edgy sort of person. It's just having it around you, just surrounding yourself with all that, you know, contraband. It's like it's good to have it there.
Oh my goodness! I'm gonna put on 626 area code 626. Unfortunately, I'm really bad with remembering even people that have called in a bunch of times. I'm sorry that I don't keep track. So, good evening, 626. You're on.
Hi.
Project U Radio.
I'm Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I've been listening in and. You know, the funniest thing about it is I started out writing nonfiction and having my family wanting to kill me
right.
over each little detail about what I write about. I remember writing a piece, like, I don't know, some years ago where I talked about my marriage and people, you know, not my ex-wife, but my mother was certainly very angry about it. And I sort of shied away from that, and I started writing poetry and fiction and things like that. But it's hard for me to write about my family, as it's easier to write about people and acquaintances that I've come across over the years. It's easier for me to disguise people and not have them want to wring my neck.
Right. Well,
because
especially with the internet,
people,
you know, it's easy to find stuff, too. I mean, back in the day, you know, but now, I mean, you can search for things and people find things that they're not even looking for just because, you know, I mean, who hasn't
right.
Googled somebody before? I mean, you know, everybody at some point does. And, you know, it's an awkward feeling to have, you know, grandma or aunt, whoever, you know, come across something
right.
that you have out there. But that being said, I think on the other hand, and I think probably Frank would probably, I hope, agree with this, too. I think he would, that, you know, it's important to put it out there sometimes anyway. I mean, and stand by it and say, well, you know what? Yeah. You know, this is what I'm writing. This is what I'm saying, and these are the words I'm using. Bad words, Grandma. You know.
I feel it's kind of like you people didn't put me through this torture and this fuck up existence for nothing. I'm getting something out of this shit, and that's like kind of how I feel about it. Kind of like a middle
right.
finger.
Yeah.
Like, my next book coming up. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wrote a poem about my mom likes to feed feral cats. And I wrote a poem about that, and it's in an anthology, and I'm terrified of showing my mother that. And
well, would she be honored by the fact that, I mean, on a certain level, I mean, you know, that's kind of cool to, you know, I don't know.
I guess
it depends
somehow,
on how you portray somebody, you know. I think it's
somehow
feeding feral
like
cats.
It
would be cool.
Somehow I need to protect my mother from some of the things that I do write. And I do feel
you know,
like
I've heard
just,
it said. I've heard it said though that if you're going to know writers and have them, that's kind of the deal. Is you're on some level, you know, if you're going to be, you're fair game. You're fair game, and it's you know, and it might be unfair to the people that are get stuck with us as their family, but you know, eventually. We're going to write about them, and we're going to write stuff about them, and that's it. You know, and it's a little bit different because you don't get to just you can disown your family, but you can, you know, they don't get to disown your ability or your right to write about them. You know, and that's one of the things that other people just have to be aware of sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, it's
well,
a dangerous
a
job. Yeah. I mean, I and the other thing is the idea of using, I mean, a lot of people use pseudonyms. I mean, a lot of people just have decided for different reasons that, you know, it's just easier, you know, because of their jobs, because they're, you know, like, for example, a lot of teachers, people that work in certain jobs, you know, they're in a position where they actually have their bosses searching and looking at what they're doing online and objecting to it and saying, you know, wait a minute, you know, you're a role model for children. You can't be, you know, putting this stuff out there with your name on it, because God forbid, a kid see it and Google you and find it. I mean, you know, there's this fear I think some people have, you know, what if my boss sees this? What if I write something that's, you know, that goes a bit far, and I actually could get in trouble for it. I think some people do have that real concern, you know. I mean, I've certainly had jobs where, you know, I had to really kind of pay attention to what I did and what I said, because it would not have gone down well at all. You know, and that's the choice you make. Now I kind of look at it like, well, gee, I don't want to have a job where I have to be looking over my shoulder for everything I do and say, you know, but that's a choice that you know, not everyone can make. And using, I mean, I wonder if you guys agree with using your real name or just putting yourself out there and saying, you know what, this is me, you know,
for
whatever
yes,
risks
always,
there are.
I mean, there's always a great note. If you're really going to, like, take writing as something that you want to do with your life, I mean, completely want to do with your life, if you're putting your whole self into it, you should probably use your whole name, unless you started years ago, like, you know, like Razor. You know, he started years ago with that name, but I'm not going to go and change my name to, like, Peter Smith, like, tomorrow or something. Like I think that you should just always, with the work thing, I don't know. I mean, are people really, like, going to search you and Google you that much? And if you were making a great living off of writing, would you actually be even working there? I mean,
employers will Google you. They will. Your potential employers will look you up. And if you, so you know, but it shouldn't be that big. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. But you never know, because you never know what you're getting with an employer. But I would say that certainly, if you're somebody who like writes porn for money,
right,
or something like that, you should probably do that under an assumed name, because it's not. You know, you've got a serious employer out there. They will find you. It's not that hard if you're using your real name, and it will, because I've had that happen to friends too.
Right. No, and I've seen it. I've definitely seen it. I mean, I've seen it with, like, for example, with women, like you said, who have written, you know, maybe not necessarily pornographic things, but you know, some pretty graphic fiction. You know, or they've had readings on YouTube, whatever, you know, and they've had their bosses come across it and say, you know what, that's just not the kind of image that we want for our company or our business. And, you know, but like I said, I think that I'm at a point now where, for me, I kind of think, well, I don't know that I want a job where I have to suppress what I do and say to that degree. But, you know, that's easier said than done, I think, for most people. I think some people, you know, hey, your job is your job, and you can't always take, you know, those kinds of risks. But, you know, I think that it's also the idea of being accountable. I mean, you know, if you write something, I kind of believe at this point, at least, that you should stand by it and say, you know what, look, this is mine. I wrote this, I did it, you know, and that's my name on it, so be it. You know, whatever happens, happens. You know, I do think it's not cowardly to use, you know, to use another name, but I think that Frank's right. I think that it's, if it is really a part of who you are as a person, then it's very difficult to do everything that you want to do. You know, it's like you have a double life. I mean, you know, I think that's very hard to manage after a while, you know. I don't know. That's just my take. I'm going to actually pick up another call, and I don't know who this is either, and I apologize for that. Frankie Metro is a lot better with the switchboard, definitely. So whoever our blocked number,
yeah.
I can't even say your area code,
right.
But I just put you on. So welcome.
Right. Yeah, hey. Long time caller, first time listener. This is Marky. How you doing?
Hi.
How you doing?
Hi. Welcome.
Hey,
we're just shooting the breeze tonight.
I worked at Home Depot. I'm fucking disabled now. I sprayed some weed killer in my eyes.
Oh my God.
Hey, Frankie, go Celtics. Go Celtics.
All right, cool. I don't even know who,
yeah.
Who is this?
This is Marky. You know Marky, what the fuck?
Oh, okay.
sir, I thought I'd call in. You know, there's some stuff. I'm disabled. I got a lot of time. I don't have to worry about employers Googling me because the state's my fucking employer. They write my check. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I I'm not worried about any of that. But, you know, there's certain things I don't like to read. I don't like to read or write about. I don't care about the sucking somebody's balls. You know, I don't want to read that in poems. I don't write about it myself. I don't want to hear about somebody's sex life, and I don't want anybody to read about mine, you know, so I just leave certain things out of poetry, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, do you feel...
I mean, sucking balls is interesting. Don't get me wrong. Sucking balls, it's interesting. Sometimes it can be fun. But I don't always want to hear about it, especially in poetry. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I guess it depends how it's presented, you know.
Right,
I can't say...
Right. Right,
that's what I meant earlier about you could tell if it's for real or if it's shock value. And sometimes you don't need to put it, but sometimes if it's the basis of the story, it kind of has to happen. But
well, here's the thing, you're not going to write about sucking balls if you're getting your balls sucked, you know? The people that write about that aren't getting their balls sucked. That's why they're writing about it, you know?
Well, there's probably something to it. I mean, I think sometimes it's also just gratuitous. People kind of throw it into everything they do because, you know, you know, that's their style. You know, it's like, you know, it's drugs, it's this, it's, and nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that's their thing. That's what they do. But, you know,
you
I don't know.
Your ball suck feels pretty good, too, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I can't speak to that, but. I imagine that it would. I mean, you know, maybe I should read about it.
It's similar, like getting your balls sucked is kind of similar to getting, like, your fucking back rubbed. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. No, that's nothing. That's cool. No, I mean,
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think it's completely different.
No, I think it's the same thing, you know? It's like freshly squeezed orange juice. You know what I'm saying? It's like a fucking deep dish pizza.
Maybe it depends. It depends on, I guess, the skill set that we're talking about of the person helping you out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
I like to think that. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off, Tootsie.
Oh no. I mean, I wonder if. I mean, but you, like you said, there are certain things you don't want to read about and certain things you don't want to write about. I mean, you think there are things that are kind of off the table, like they just, you know, they just have no place.
For me personally, you know, I get sick when I have to read page after page of somebody's fucking sex life or their broken relationship or some shit. You know, I get bored with it.
So what do you like to read, Marky? What's the kind of literature you like to read?
You know, man... I like to read about, you know, the passage of time. You know what I'm saying?
Over the passage of time? No, I don't know what you're saying. I need you to be more specific.
The cyclical nature of existence? What do you mean?
Yeah, like I fucking started out as an egg in my mother's fucking fallopian tube, you know, and I'm going to wind up in a grave in a couple of years. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't sound that far removed from the sex life, though. You know, the fallopian tubes are pretty close to the sex life there.
Well, do you think it's lack of imagination sometimes that people sort of revert back to that over and over and over because they get sort of kind of stuck in a rut, and that's sort of all they can do. And you know, I think that for a lot of people, you know, a couple of years down the road, they evolve as writers, and they start to sort of move on into doing other things or writing about the same things in new ways. I mean, you know, even like, I mean, you know, Frank's got a book coming out, and I mean, I just, not that I'm an expert on Frank, but I mean, I noticed that they seem different to me. There's a different depth to them, you know, in the newer work, and I think that's you know, the product of staying with it for years and years. But maybe some people just go back to the same stuff because that's all they have. I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to be...
I don't even think fucking Frank's an expert on Frank. You know what I'm saying? You know, small minds live in the bathroom and the bedroom. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying. I'll be honest with you, since we're talking about candor, man. I don't know what you're saying. I don't know. It's like, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe because it's a Friday night and I don't know, I'm tired because I'm like scratching my head like, wait a minute. I thought I was with you.
The river of Markey runs deep. I'm used to people not getting it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, no, you and me both, so I know what that's like. I wonder if Kevin's around. Is Kevin around still? Nobody puts Kevin in a corner.
No one puts Kevin in a corner, Markey.
I want to see what Kevin...
Who's Kevin?
I'm your worst nightmare, Markey. I'm that egg that hasn't hatched yet.
Oh, my goodness.
This is going to the bathroom and the bedroom, I'm telling you now. Kevin, I didn't know there was another person on here.
Yeah, well, there's Paul Corman Roberts, there's Frank Reardon, there's Kevin.
Oh.
Kevin who? Well, you don't have to tell us.
Kevin Ridgway.
Okay, I thought Ridgway. So. I didn't want to.
Yeah, right, right.
I didn't want to, you know, guess. And so, Kevin, what do you think? How do you feel about the whole, you know, page after page of, you know, balls? I mean,
ball? I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I've been through that, Kevin.
I had my balls licked tonight, Markey.
Nice.
10 minutes ago. No.
I don't know how I feel about balls after balls, but. I've written about my penis. I feel like that's another subject that needs to be covered, the penis.
It was a haiku. Short poem.
If...
Well, I mean, do you think sometimes people sort of go there because they're trying to be transgressive and they're trying to be, you know, I'm a rebel, everything I do is going to be, you know. I don't know. I'm just being devil's advocate here. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like people that do that, I don't know. People that do that don't get laid enough. I don't know.
Yeah, you might be right.
Kevin. The people writing about it are the ones ain't getting it, otherwise they wouldn't be writing about it. You can quote Bobby Esposito on that.
I don't see what the big deal is if the story of the situation calls for it and that's what happened, write about it. Do I get bored if I goes on for like 10 pages? Yeah, of course I do. Do I get bored if they don't write about anything else ever? But come on, a good freaking perverted sex story is nice for a laugh once in a while.
Right.
And it happens to everybody. It's part of truth to write about it. But if that's your only truth, then yeah, of course you're going to be boring.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not that different than someone who everything they write is about rivers and trees for 10 pages. I mean, unless, you know, I mean, there are some pretty, you know, there's some pretty good nature writing, don't get me wrong, but too much of anything, I think, can be a little, you know, can be a little excessive after a while.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how some of these people, these dead writers, quote-unquote famous ones, have written 45 pages straight about a river that they walk next to or something like that. I want to blow my brains out. Like, I mean, how many pretty or languagey ways can you tell me about a river before I'm ready to put my face to a plate glass window?
Right, or 800 pages about the passage of a single day.
River. Mail to Frankie.
That's like my first creative writing teacher. Rivers and windows and trees and leaves while we were all doing drugs.
Don't you think, though, on a certain level that it's sort of a testament to somebody's talent when you can do that? I mean, my favorite writer, I'll just say, is Annie Dillard. And, I mean, you know, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek is like hundreds. I mean, it's like basically sitting there by a creek for pages and pages and pages. But she does it in such an artful way that she does it like no one else can. If I did that for 200 pages, you know, you'd be in tears. But, you know, I think there's something about the ability to... you know, the talent of being able to make something like that capture your attention, you know, I think.
Doesn't that kind of writing extrapolate, though? Aren't there more things being talked about in passages like that than just, you know, the river and the trees and the flowers that are in there?
Could make the argument that 10 pages of balls, that there's more going on there, too, Paul. I mean, you know, maybe it's...
Unless you're reading straight porn or amateur erotica, which there's no lack of, you know, in the small underground press.
There's, there's a metaphor in there somewhere, I'm sure. Well, I don't know. I guess that's sort of where we're at with it. I mean, I think we were going to sort of do – we're at about 45 minutes, and, you know, I don't want to – you know, I mean, I don't want to, like, cut off anybody or whatever, but I did want to say that, like I said in the beginning, we are going to do a couple of different things. I think we're going to sort of take a break from doing the topics and just the discussion every week, and I think that it would be fun to next week just sort of do an open mic. Anybody that feels like reading something can just kind of call up and say, you know, hey, this is me, I'm reading, you know, one or two pieces, and if not, you know, I mean, something like that, I think, kind of be a little more free and loose with things, you know. I think we'll try that. So, I mean, I do appreciate you guys calling in and sort of weighing in on it, and, you know, and I do appreciate you, Paul, for you know, co-hosting the way that you do every week, and for, you know, being involved in Frankie Metro when he's able. I mean, we all have scheduled stuff, so...
Well, big thanks to Frank and Kevin for calling in, and Mark.
Yeah,
Marky,
and Marky.
Marky Espositos out there somewhere, you know. Are you driving a truck out there, Marky? I don't know if you're driving a truck out there. I guess he's gone.
I don't know.
Yeah, he had to stop at the rest stop.
Yeah. Well, he's probably in the bedroom. No, I'm just kidding.
getting his balls sucked.
right.
He doesn't want to read about it. He wants to live it.
He's like, yeah, I don't have to. I live it. You know, I'm gonna get off the phone and go. Yeah,
maybe he's getting ready for his own show in a few minutes. Who knows?
Right. Could be. But no, and thank you to Kevin. It's nice to, you know, nice to meet you, actually. I don't never really talked to you before, so that's cool. You know, I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, at least you get to sort of see what other people think about stuff. You know, I think that it's cool to do that. So I think we're just going to kind of wrap it up and see you guys next week. How about that?
Sounds good. Okay. We'll talk to you next week, Lynn.
All right. Thank you. And so this is Project U Radio. I'm Lynn Alexander. I think I said all this already. So if you feel so inclined, you can listen to Red Fez Radio. I believe it's at, see the time thing again. I think it's at 11 Central. That's. But you know what? You can go to the Red Fez Radio page, and it'll give you your time zone, so there's no confusion. And Tim Murray does that. And I believe he's having Jason on tonight, right? Well, Juice. Sorry. I think we're supposed to call him Juice.
Juice. Juice man.
Right? I think that's his guest for the evening. So that'll be cool. I'm going to listen to it myself. So, okay. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.